If you would, please turn your Bibles to Genesis chapter 2. And we're going to talk about a subject this evening that I think is probably on the minds of a lot of folks, not just folks here, but a lot of people that we come into contact with from day to day. Happiness and being happy and what it takes to be happy is something that occupies the minds of lots and lots of people, especially of Americans. To Americans, we take this business of happiness very seriously. Declaration of Independence that declares the unalienable rights that exist for many. Or for all who are citizens of this country, these rights including life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But what are the components of happiness? What are the ingredients? What does it take for us to be happy? And I think you would probably find a variety of answers in that regard. But I've asked you to look at Genesis chapter 2 because I would think that in the Garden of Eden, surely there was a time when people were happy. There was a time when what was needed, the ingredients that were required for happiness, were certainly present. Now, as you well know the story, that sadly wasn't sufficient for Adam and Eve. But nonetheless, I believe that most who at least believe in the account of Genesis, most would accept the idea that what really was required for happiness for the man and the woman was present there in the garden. And so if we look at the account of what it was like in the garden for Adam and Eve, we can perhaps come to some grip of what is required for happiness in our life as well. And as you think about that, I would say that probably the first thing that will come to the minds of a lot of folks is, well, certainly what Adam and Eve had in the garden was they had fellowship with God. God, of course, is intended to be the prime ingredient of happiness for His creation. And it comes as no surprise that for Adam and Eve, the first of His human creations, a fellowship with Him was at the very center of their happy existence in this life. Genesis 3 and verse 8 tells us that they heard the sound of the Lord walking in the garden in the cool of the day, and the man and his wife hid themselves from the presence of the Lord among the trees of the garden. The affirmation here of the Lord walking in the garden seems to suggest that this was an occurrence with which Adam and Eve were familiar, and that this is an indication of the kind of relationship, the close relationship, the intimacy that existed between God and Adam and Eve before sin entered the picture. And so we find Him walking in the garden and seeking them out and asking them as they tried to hide themselves from Him, you know, asking them where they were. As He sought that close communication and communion with them, those sin destroyed that direct fellowship with God that Adam and Eve had. Nonetheless, fellowship with God continues to be possible for men and women, and continues to be the very basis of our happy existence in this life. 1 John chapter 1, in the first four verses, John the Apostle describes the fellowship that existed between the Father and the Son, the fellowship that existed between God and John and the other apostles, and the fellowship that they sought to establish between believers and the Lord as well. Later in that same letter, John writes in the third chapter, in the first two or three verses, about the great love that God the Father had bestowed upon us, in that we are called children of God. And he emphasizes the truth of that by saying, "And such we are," as he describes that intimate fellowship that exists between God and His people, so that Christians today can maintain a fellowship with God as the basis for their happiness and life. Unfortunately, many people in the religious world, and unfortunately sometimes even among brethren, there is the thought that religion and the pursuit of happiness are two mutually exclusive things. That you really can't be happy. You really can't enjoy life and the things about life if you're going to be a religious person. And likewise, if you enjoy life and you attain a basis for happiness in this life, then that means you can't be that much of a religious person. But nothing could be further from the truth. At the very beginning of human existence, at the time when mankind was put in the position where he could enjoy the utmost happiness in this life, there was the basis of a fellowship with God that was present there. It's no wonder that later in the book of Genesis, in the fifth chapter, when describing the relationship that a man named Enoch had with God, it describes that relationship as Enoch walked with God. Now that doesn't, I don't believe that means walked in the same sense of God walking in the garden in that relationship with Adam and Eve, but rather in the sense that even the New Testament talks about our walking with the Lord today. That was the basis upon which Enoch's fellowship grew with the Lord. But not only are we able to be happy in this life because of a fellowship with God, we're able to be happy in this life because of the fellowship with others. You go back to Genesis, the second chapter, in the 18th verse. And we read there that the Lord God said, "It is not good for the man to be alone. I will make him a helper suitable for him." So the text goes on to describe in this same garden chapter how God made a fellowship that would exist between two human beings. And he created Eve to be the helper that was suitable to Adam. This fellowship, of course, relates to marriage, but it's not limited to marriage. The interaction that we have with other people is the basis upon which we can be truly happy in this life. This morning, as Brother Wiest led us in prayer, one of the things that he expressed was a gratitude and appreciation to God for the existence of a relationship such as exists here at this place, in this church, and prayed that it would continue and that the love that exists would abound amongst us. That was the prayer that we find the Apostle Paul expressing for his brethren in Philippi, that their love might abound yet more and more. Far too often, the forces of our modern life kind of drive us in a different direction, to where we have less and less of a connection to other people. How many people do you know on your street? of your neighbors. It's just kind of the curse of modern life that kind of closeness and association among neighbors doesn't exist to the degree that it did in times past. I remember seeing what I think is probably an indication of how this connection between people is being destroyed. I went to a restaurant, local restaurant here, and sat down for the meal and looked over and saw at the table a family of four, husband, his wife, two teenage children, boy and a girl. And the four of them sat there. I am not exaggerating, as the saying goes, if I'm lying, I'm dying. The four of them sat there with their phones, and they were texting or playing games or doing whatever. And I did not sit there and watch them the whole time. But in the amount of time that they did have my attention, they spoke not one word to one another. It was all directed, all the attention and the activity was directed to the phone. It just represents, it seems to me, that continued wearing away of the attachment of personal attachments that we have with one another. That God set up a means by which that attachment could exist between ourselves as we come together, join together in the work together for the Lord in this place. And hopefully prevent any of the modern aspects of life from destroying that kind of connection to one another. I'm afraid that too often we pursue happiness in life at the expense of personal kinds of relationship. You've all heard the acknowledgement of the fact that on a person's deathbed, nobody wishes that they had spent more time at work. But many times, people wish that they had spent more time with their family and developing that close relationship that God established should exist within our human families. And certainly that He augmented by establishing a spiritual family. So if you and I are going to seek out happiness in this life, and if we use this record of the way things were in the Garden of Eden as kind of a template for us to pattern our lives after and our seeking of happiness, then we're going to have to recognize that we need one another and we need the connection to one another. But now there's a third thing that I would suggest to you that was present in that garden that was a part of the happiness of Adam and Eve, and that was just the creation, the garden itself, that which God had created and put into place. And we have the description of, you know, all of the various kinds of trees that were and plants that were good for food, and how Adam and Eve were given such a wide range of choices and a freedom to choose so liberally from and to use the creation that they were in the midst of in such a liberal way that the Lord had arranged. And we need that appreciation for God's own creation and our privilege to exist and to enjoy it even today. Turn, if you would, over to Psalms. In Psalms 111, Verse 2, there the psalmist says, "Great are the works of the Lord. They are studied by all who delight in them." Well, the psalmist is just saying that those who really appreciate and are impressed by the works, the creative works of God, take note of them. They are those great works. Or it doesn't come until the vacation time, and you have a couple of weeks away from it. And certainly there is some rest and some enjoyment in those times of respite from our work, but work does not interfere with happiness, as we maybe sometimes are inclined to think, but rather it's a vital part of happiness. It was a vital part of what God established there in the garden, and when he put Adam and Eve in the midst. In chapter 2 of Genesis, once again, and in verse 15, the Lord took the man and put him into the Garden of Eden to cultivate it and keep it. Now, later on, after Adam and Eve sin, and part of the punishment we see where God talks about the labor of man was going to intensify, the difficulty in his labor was going to intensify, and a lot of times folks take that then and conclude, well, work and the intensified labor that was required, that was, so work was the punishment for man's sin. But that's not the case at all. God gave Adam something to do when he put him there in the midst of the garden. He gave him work. The punishment, at least that part of the punishment, was the intensification of that work and that labor. We find many, I think, expressions of in the Scriptures of the fundamental goodness of work and what is derived from it. Ecclesiastes 5 and verse 12, there the preacher writes, "The sleep of a laboring man is sweet." And we may look at that sometimes and say, well, yeah, that's because he's worked so hard and so he's so tired and the sleep is good. And yeah, I think there's an aspect of that, but that's true. But the labor of a laboring man, whatever that labor is, whatever type of labor it is fundamentally good and needful for the well-being of the man. Some have said in the past that there are two basic classes of people in the world. There are producers and consumers. There are givers and there are takers. And certainly we have all seen, and they are present in the Scriptures as well, examples of individuals who will not work. And you're all familiar with Paul's direction to the Thessalonians about such people, that if a man will not work, neither let him eat. Why? As some people say, Paul was just a hateful old man. Well, no, Paul was just indicating by God's direction what is best for us, what is in our best interest, and what is at the root of our happiness. That is to have something to do, a work to be engaged in, to have an appreciation for the creation of God around us, to have people in our lives that make our lives more enjoyable and that make us better. Edwin, in his prayer this morning, expressed the notion of like iron sharpening iron. We benefit, should benefit one another. And then also because of a fellowship with God, we can have that happiness. And then finally, what was present in the garden that was essential to the happiness of the man and the woman, was a law from God. Now here, a lot of times folks will say, oh, well, you know, that's when you start putting restrictions on people, well, then to that degree, whatever degree of restrictions you put on people, to that degree you inhibit their happiness. Yet, God, before Adam and Eve sinned, during this period of time when they were truly happy, or at least truly in a situation where they had the best opportunity for their happiness, they had a law. God's law didn't enter the picture as a result of their sin. God's law entered the picture before their sin. The existence of God's law was required actually for sin to ever occur. If there was no law, there could have been no sin or no violation of the law. But governing man and governing our actions and our attitudes is essential in the moral realm. Jeremiah chapter 10 and verse 23 expresses it by saying that it's not in man to direct his own steps. It's not within us to devise the way that is right. We need to be told the way that's right. We need to be given a guidance from God, a governance from God. And I acknowledge that it's contrary to popular philosophy and words like discipline and control and boundaries are words that maybe are not all that popular in the minds of a lot of folks. But the fact of the matter is that there are powerful forces within us that must be harnessed and directed. One of the most powerful being our choice, our ability to choose. It needs to be guided. It needs to be governed. It needs to be harnessed so that we make the kinds of choices that will enable us to truly be happy and to live lives that can be truly happy. God's law, as Paul proclaims it in the Roman letter, God's law is good. It's a vital part of what makes our happiness possible. Turn, if you would, over to the Psalms once again, to Psalm 19. And begin in verse 7 with me. The law of the Lord is perfect, restoring the soul. The testimony of the Lord is sure, making wise the simple. The precepts of the Lord are right, rejoicing the heart. The commandment of the Lord is pure, enlightening the eyes. The fear of the Lord is clean, enduring forever. The judgments of the Lord are true. They are righteous altogether. They are more desirable than gold, yes, than much fine gold, sweeter also than honey and drippings of the honeycomb. Moreover, by them thy servant is warned. In keeping them there is great reward. Who can discern his errors? Acquit me of my hidden faults. Also, keep back thy servant from presumptuous sins. Let them not rule over me. Then I shall be blameless, and I shall be acquitted of great transgression. Let the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in thy sight, O Lord, my rock and my redeemer. Do you see in those verses, particularly in the second half of several of those verses, such things that are necessary for the happiness of an individual? A restored soul in verse 7. A simple one becoming wise in verse 7. A rejoicing heart in verse 8. Enlightened eyes in verse 8. Fear of the Lord. You drop down to the latter verses an acquittal of wrongdoings in verse 12. The avoidance of sinning in presumptuous or high-handed ways. And you just go through those all of those verses, and it is really a laundry list of the things that are real, that are necessary for what is true happiness in life. And all of it was in the garden. So what is it that you think is necessary for happiness? As I said, most people have some kind of definition of happiness and of what's required for it. Too oftentimes we answer that question in terms of things that are totally absent from the Garden of Eden. The only environment in history where there was, at least for a time, perfect happiness. Are you happy? I would tell you this. The very first thing we mentioned, fellowship with God, is where to begin. Growing out of that fellowship with God, there can then be a fellowship with other people of God that will help you in your life. There can be an appreciation, a greater appreciation of what God did in creating all that is, what God did in providing work for us, and what God does in providing His law. But the beginning has to be in the fellowship with God. Are you in fellowship with Him? If you're separated from God by your sins, you can tonight be reconciled to Him in your obedience to His gospel. If you've strayed away from His gospel, you can be restored to Him once again in obedience to His gospel. If you're subject to His gospel invitation tonight, we encourage you to come in obedience to Him while we stand and sing.